Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Ready? One, two, three, four!
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about, of course, it's about the Iditarod. We are a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM in Nome. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Before we jump on in, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod 2018 comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
Iditarod mushers are cruising into day three, and the front runners are already about a quarter of the way down the 1,000-mile trail to Nome. Don't worry, though, we still have quite a few days left. There are still some mandatory rest stops along the way and a time adjustment for the staggered start, so it's a little hard to tell who really has command of this race just yet. I'm recording this Tuesday morning, and in the lead, where he was mushing most of the night, is Wasilla musher Ryan Reddington, who was the first into Nikolai. Nikolai is about 260 miles into the 1,000-mile trail. Reddington was trailed by Girdwood's Nicholas Petit, only a couple miles behind after making up some ground early this morning, and defending champ Mitch Seavey just another couple miles back. So those two are arriving in Nikolai relatively close to each other and pretty close to Reddington, so not a major difference there. Also running at the front of the pack are Norwegian musher Jor Lifseth Olsom, Ray Reddington Jr., that's Ryan's brother, he's out of Wasilla, Willow's Wade Mars, Jesse Royer out of Fairbanks, Two Rivers' Ali Zirkel, and Cody Straith, whose bio says he's from Fairbanks, but some of us know he's really based in Esther. Esther represent. Anyway, the teams are all strung out between Rainy Pass and Nikolai. That's a distance of more than 100 miles, and it means they've either made it through or are currently heading through the Alaska Range. It's a mountain pass, my friends, and it features some of the most technically difficult sections of trail. First, there are the Happy River Steps. Those are switchbacks on which the dogs pick up speed, the sleds careen around corners, and they can easily get dumped. Many a food cooker has been spilled there, and that is a vital tool for the entire race, among other things that get dumped along the trail. Let me tell you, I walked up the Happy River Steps one time, and it was strewn with all sorts of debris. And if you're a musher, you just hope that it's not something that gets left behind that you just desperately need later on. After the steps, a little while later, heading out of Puntilla Lake is another daunting challenge. We have a report coming up about this from my friend and yours, one of our trail reporters, the intrepid Zachariah Hughes, but first, I want to play some audio from the 2014 race. This is from a video recorded by four-time Iditarod champion Jeff King, mushing out of Denali. As he's balancing on his sled on the edge of a cliff, holding on for dear life, his team runs through the Dalzell Gorge and the Farewell Burn, and I think it gives a sense of how dog mushing is so much more than just standing on the runners while the dogs pull you.
It's almost scary how fast they're going, and it worries me. Stay.
Spoiler alert, they do not stay. What you can't see there is the sled bouncing off of trees, over bare ground and stumps, and King hanging onto the sled while it's flipped on its side along with him. I'd encourage you to find that video. It belongs to Jeff, but it was posted by another news outlet. I'll give you a hint, their initials are A, D, and N. But you can find it by going to YouTube and searching Jeff King Iditarod. I believe it will be the first video that shows up. What you'll see in that video is not as much snow as it sounds like the mushers have to work with this year. Those low snow years are why the Iditarod restarted in Fairbanks in 2015 and again in 2017. A lot of mushers are glad to be back on the traditional southern route this year. The Iditarod is supposed to be tough, and the challenge of going through the Alaska Range is a big part of that. But as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, even years later, the infamous 2014 conditions along that stretch left a lasting impression on mushers, one that some of them even brought special gear for.
Jim Lanier did not become a 77-year-old musher by fooling around.
Well, the thing is, it's a contact sport.
Standing in the sunshine with his team of ghostly white huskies at the Finger Lake checkpoint, Lanier is wearing what looks like a black, high-tech exoskeleton.
It's sort of full-body armor. neck to crotch. I'm covered. And elbows and knees. I got it there too.
The gear is technically for mountain bike racing, an upgrade from the hockey pads Lanier has worn in past years. The protective equipment is specifically for the 100 miles of trail through the Alaska Range, on past Roane and into Nikolai. Lanier has broken enough bones in the course of his mushing career to dress with precaution in mind.
It's like the old bold pilot thing. There's old pilots and there's bold pilots, but there's no old bold pilot. Same for musher.
Lanier's hardly alone in treating this section of trail with extra reverence. One checkpoint ahead, at Rainy Pass, Scott Jensen reaches into a drop bag shipped specifically for this particular part of the trail and pulls out a chest protector meant for high-speed snow machining.
It's all hard-sided, keep me from breaking some ribs. And then I got my boy's snowboarding helmet. I mean, better safe than sorry. I don't want to hit my head and get knocked out of the race.
In the 2014 race, when the downhill gorge was so icy there was no way to control dog teams as they charged over rocks and tree stumps, Jensen made it down relatively unscathed. But his luck ran out, going through the Buffalo tunnels on the way to Roane.
I crashed and got a concussion. About 4 hours later, I broke through some ice, ran back to my sled, slipped on the ice, and broke my foot.
Jensen scratched that year, and the experience seriously affected him. He had bad anxiety in the 2 weeks before this year's race, stuck in thoughts about the most brutal parts of the trail. That's similar for Kelly Maxner, who in 2014 led the pack down the gorge and was the first to make it to Roane.
It is a little bit of PTSD from that. You know, I think anytime you're fearing for your life or anything like that, which I think that at that point in time I actually was, because that was pretty nerve-wracking through there that year.
Maxner did not pack extra protective gear this time around, largely because the snow conditions are vastly better, and because mushers were assured they would not face that degree of hazard again. An outcry after the 2014 race prompted the Iditarod to take extra precautions determining if areas of the trail were suitably safe. From overhead, the thin ribbon of trail snaking through the gorge had plenty of snow, but also plenty of open water, which could make for a soggy run out of the mountains. From Finger Lake and Rainy Pass on the Iditarod Trail, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Well, we'll be looking forward to hearing more about those tough sections of trail and the ones to come. And we've had one scratch so far in the race. It wasn't due to injury, but still kind of scary. Zoya Denier of Delta Junction pulled out yesterday, according to a statement from the Iditarod, because of personal health reasons. Denier told a reporter with Anchorage TV station KTVA that she sometimes has a rapid, irregular heartbeat, something she noticed, I guess, as she was coming into Squintna. And after she scratched in Squintna, Denier was flown to an Anchorage hospital to get checked out. We wish her the best of luck. Well, sometimes dogs get flown out too. It actually happens pretty often. They might not be performing well enough. Like the mushers, they can get injured, but a musher is required to be able to carry the dog in their sled to the next checkpoint if they're going to drop the dog, have it flown out. Sometimes they just carry the dogs to give them extra rest for later. Some mushers used to actually attach a trailer sled behind their main sled to carry dogs, but that's not allowed anymore. And that brings us to today's question. It comes to us from Veronica.
Hi, I did a pod. I'm curious about those new rules for carrying dogs in front of sleds. Will that impact race speeds or race strategies?
Hi, Veronica. This is a really good question. The rule about carrying dogs in trailers and in sleds first went into effect in the 2017 race last year. And the rule stated that you can't be carrying sled dogs or hauling dogs in the back of a trailer. That if you're going to do it, it has to be in the basket of the sled where the musher can see. The logic being that if a sled detached and it was dragging behind, a musher might not know that some of their dogs had come undone and it could put the dogs in jeopardy. And so what we saw in the 2017 race among some of the mushers who had practiced rotating dogs or carrying them in trailers behind them was that some of them got really inventive with where they stashed dogs. This was the year that Dallas CV built his Kevlar, you know, Batmobile sled that could hold 4 or 5 dogs in the body and was pretty heavy. I think it was a few hundred pounds. Likewise, Mitch Seavey had a sled that was a little bit lighter, but also let him rotate dogs in and out and keep them comfortable and carried very minimal gear to kind of allow for maximum dog rotation. So we've seen mushers adapt in ways that didn't, you know, skirt the rule totally, but maybe kind of interpreted it a little bit differently and abided by it by the letter. You also had people towing sleds that, instead of hauling a dog, just hauled supplies, food, straw, stuff like that. So maybe distributed weight a little bit differently, but didn't ultimately seem to change a whole lot. Thanks.
Thanks to Zach for the answer, and thanks to Veronica for the question. We love getting these questions about the Iditarod or generally about dog mushing. We take them as emails, but better yet, please send us those in voice memo form. Just open up your phone's voice memo app, record your question, please tell us where you're at and how to pronounce your name, and then send that to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. So, dog safety is at the heart of the trailer rule, and changing gears here a little bit, it's also at the heart of criticism of the Iditarod. One of the more high-profile people to come into Anchorage for protests against the Iditarod ahead of the race was Canadian filmmaker Fern Levitt. She made the 2016 documentary Sled Dogs, which aired on CBC, and many people in the animal rights movement point to it as a kind of black fish for the anti-mushing movement. That was the documentary about captive orcas that led to a broad backlash against SeaWorld. Levitt is not part of PETA, but she shares many of their criticisms, and a few hours after the ceremonial start on Saturday, she had a showing of the documentary at a public library in Anchorage. Zach attended, as did about a dozen people, and afterwards, Levitt sat down to talk about a shift in her filmmaking focus from human rights to criticism of commercial mushing.
Why don't you tell me what the reactions have been in the year and a half since Sled Dogs came out?
Well, it's had an impact on the sled dog industry because, you know, at least I know in Canada, people are seeing it and finding out, and they had no idea, just like I did, what really goes on behind the scenes, and they had no idea what the laws are in Canada and the United States. And so it's really, the sled dog industry has been, the commercial sled dog industry has been hit because people aren't going as much, and the numbers are dropping and dropping rapidly. So it's had a huge impact on the industry. Schools that used to go don't. You know, it's not over till it's over. And for me, it's not over until all those dogs are off the chains and in homes where they belong.
And so is that your ultimate goal, is to just kind of end this form of husbandry writ large?
Well, I would love to see the same thing that goes on in Germany happening here. I have nothing against dog sledding, and I would do it myself. If I had more than one dog, I would go dog sledding. So I don't have any problem with it. Places like Germany and Switzerland, where they have much more rigid laws, much more strict laws in terms of animal welfare. So when they go dog sledding, they only have a couple of dogs. They live at home with them. They're not used for profit. And it's a wonderful, fun, great sport. But dogs are not considered property in those countries the way they are in Canada and the United States. They're sentient beings, and they're respected, and there's laws to protect them.
Levitt's position, and I think probably PETA's, is that dogs should not be used in these ways, that they should not be used to further a commercial venture, and that they shouldn't be tied up outside to a chain or hooked up to pull a sled and a musher across 1,000 miles of Alaska. I feel like this is where I need to say that the mushers definitely would disagree with that, and many fans of the Iditarod would disagree with that. And I don't want to speak for them, but definitely we hear them say things like, this race and dog mushing, commercial dog mushing, keeps these dogs alive. That's the Iditarod's position. And commercial mushing, those are like sled dog rides that people pay for when they come to Alaska as tourists, or expeditions that take them into the Arctic maybe, or even along the Iditarod Trail to see it for themselves. Those kind of things, they make money for these mushers, and it allows them to race. It keeps the whole thing alive. So one sort of feeds into the other. They've got to make money to be Iditarod mushers, and the Iditarod, through sponsorships and whatnot, brings in money so that they can continue to do that. In fact, the Iditarod on its site, iditarod.com, has a video soliciting donations to help keep the race going. They say that they need donations now more than ever. The video says, the Iditarod was started to save sled dogs, and without the Iditarod, those dogs would have been gone a long time ago. Now, that's their position. They're trying to solicit donations, but there is a spectrum of opinions on this matter. Jeff King, whose video you heard earlier, sat down for an interview before the race, and he had an interesting take on this. It was surprising, at least to me anyway.
I'm not bashful in saying that the Iditarod has improved in the early 90s because of the pressure we got from animal rights organizations to look closer at what we were doing. And there were places that needed improvement. And the Iditarod's safety record for the dogs, mortality is different than it was 30 years ago. Now the mortality of a dog in the Iditarod is less than the licensed pet population of Anchorage. So we're doing a great job. But sometimes it takes criticism to look inside yourself and go, how can I do this better? So I hope that whatever it is we can do better, whether it's board selection, drug testing, I have been a huge advocate for the last many, many years that any dog death in the Iditarod should be cause for withdrawal of a musher. When you raise the bar, you perform better.
Some interesting conversations going on around the Iditarod this year, some controversy. We've talked about it a lot. I keep pointing back to episode 2. We talked to Anchorage Daily News reporter Tegan Hanlon. We had Zach here in the studio. If you haven't heard that one yet, maybe go back and take a listen. We're up to 7 episodes now, so there are a lot of other ones to go back to and listen to. We hope that you are enjoying those. But that is all we have time for today. Again, we're in the midst of our daily episodes, so check back tomorrow morning for the next installment of the Iditapod. You can find us on iTunes and other podcatcher apps, or listen online at alaskapublic.org. We have a bunch of other Iditarod coverage there. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm Casey Grove, and until next time, happy trails. You can find us on iTunes and other podcatcher apps, or listen online at alaskapublic.org. We have other Iditarod coverage. And hey, maybe I should just like plug the news. We have other news coverage there. Ah, boy. News.